Welcome to Bridgehead, the podcast brought to you by The Bridge here at Wellington College, where we'll be joined by a series of interesting guests to explore some of the most topical issues in the education sector. Well, hello, I'm Ian Henderson, and today I'm joined by my close colleague, Karen Taylor, who's head of educational research here at The Bridge. And we were going to spend a few minutes this afternoon just exploring some of the things that we're doing. So welcome, Karen. Good to be here.
Thank you. Welcome, Ian.
So where are we going to start?
Well, let's start at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I'm new to this project. And I'm interested to know, what are the origins of The Bridge? Where does it come from? What does it mean, The Bridge? And what's our purpose? I mean, I think I have some idea. But.
Sure. So the origins of The Bridge really were drawing together some things that Wellington was doing already. Wellington already has and had a reputation for being quite a forward-thinking, outward-facing school, trying to drive the educational conversation. The Festival of Education here at Wellington in the summer, for example, is arguably the biggest and most influential education event on the calendar. We just had, in July of last year, almost 6,000 people who were really immersed in this celebration of all that's best in educational thought leadership, in CPD, and innovative thinking. And my thought really was that, well, this is great. We do this for 2 days a year. What about the rest of the year? And how could we use the amazing privileged position that we have here to do more good for the education sector? That linked in very much to our work with our local partner schools. We're lucky enough to have some wonderful state schools locally that work really closely with us, and we have good relationships there. And our growing family of international schools around the world, at the moment in Asia, but who knows where that will take us. It's essential to us that those schools feel truly and genuinely connected to us, that they are like Wellington, they act like Wellington, they have the Wellington culture, Wellington DNA, Wellington ethos, but with a deep sensitivity to their context, and all their contexts are individual. So that's really where it came from. I suggested it as an idea. It was never particularly my plan to run it. And suddenly somebody said, but you're the best person to run it. So here I am.
Okay. Well, the originator is often the best person to launch a project.
Far be it from me to suggest that's the case. But I think that the Bridge's name and the Bridge's purpose are closely interlinked. And it's really about linking together, connecting good people to good things. There are lots and lots of really good people doing amazing things out there in education, and a lot of very busy teachers and school leaders who don't necessarily have the bandwidth to cut through the peripheral noise that exists in the sector and to find those gems. And if we can play a small part in connecting good things and good people together, in bringing to their attention, the attention of those teachers and leaders, what works and what's going to help them the most, then maybe we'll have played a small part in helping to improve education in the world. And it will be a small part, but we don't feel that we should be in any sense trying to own or control this. It's about trying to bring, as I said, good things together. So
The Bridge is about connecting people and institutions. What I understand is that there's a real generosity of spirit that is behind it, that it's about sharing, it's about learning from one another and giving back to, ultimately to our students.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there's lots of things that underpin that. The first, I think, is that there's no young person in the world who can choose who their parents are. So whoever they are, wherever they are, there's an obligation, a moral imperative as educators to do the best for the kids who are in front of us. I think it connects to Wellington's fundamental purpose. Wellington was founded as a charity to educate the orphans of army officers killed in battle. And that's reflected very much in our modern purpose of pioneering education to serve and help shape a better world. So trying to do good things has been really a central part of what we are and what we stand for. And I think this idea of connection that the bridge embodies is, yes, it's about connecting good people to good things, but it's about connecting research to practice. You know, what do we know that works? I think, you know, we might get into talking about educational research in a moment, but there are some pitfalls there, and many people fall into some of those pitfalls. So we're connecting research to practice. We're connecting novices to the pursuit of expertise. We're connecting sectors, you know, the private and state sectors. We're connecting cultures internationally. We're sometimes connecting phases and seeing a whole life journey of education from early years right through to adulthood, and trying to provide some kind of support in that.
So you just mentioned research, and of course that's of interest to me.
Yes.
And one of the reasons I think, I think it's partly why I'm here. And we just recently launched a new project, a journal in educational research and theory. And can we talk a little bit more about why that might be important and what the space that we're trying to create with that journal?
Absolutely. I think, firstly, there are dozens and dozens, hundreds probably, of really impactful pieces of research that are being done, sometimes on a very small scale that's very specific to the context in a particular class in a particular school, and sometimes wider. And not all of the research that's being done necessarily gets to the audience that it could do. And if we can collate together, publish, and communicate the findings of research in a way that really helps people, it helps teachers, it helps school leaders, it helps young people, that the things that are going on in their schools are positively impacting the learning and the development of students, I think that'd be really good. I think I mentioned some of the pitfalls in educational research. I sometimes find it quite surprising as a scientist how readily some educationalists will confuse correlation for causation. How easily some people will perhaps use confirmation bias to just cherry pick a certain piece of research that backs up their notion, their point, the thing that they want to. But it's not really a body of research, and it's certainly not necessarily transferable. And you know, that sense of what is the significance of research in context that's a really key point for the sector, I think. So delighted that, you know, I don't need to tell you this, but I'm going to on air and publicly, you know, hugely delighted that you're here. You bring massive experience and talent and expertise in this area. And I think it has resonated with people that we want to create this opportunity to publish and communicate and promote the findings of research in a way that is beneficial to people. Great that we've had so much support from really influential, important organizations and individuals to do that. So maybe I could just turn that around a bit and say, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about how the Journal of Educational Research works and how you want it to develop in time?
Yes, of course. And I'm always excited when I get to talk about it. And really grateful for the positive response from all kinds of people about the project. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot in the world of education is the gap between research and practice. And the space of this journal, and I'll come back in a second to, you know, what that means, is one in which I think we want that space to be open. So just like the larger project of the bridge, it's not simply to assume that good research comes only from, you know, academics in university settings who may or may not be distanced from the lived experience in a classroom. That there are also classroom practitioners who are doing research every day, some without even realizing it. You know, when you use an intervention in your class because you think it's going to help a student or a group of students, and you test it out and you watch and see what happens, and then you modify it, you know, that is actually research.
Yeah.
And that can be formalized, and that can be a valid, legitimate source of knowledge about how we might do things in classrooms. So the space is one that should be open to the very small project, to the larger project, to something that's qualitative, to something that's quantitative, that something that's exploratory, or something even that is a sort of ethical musing about what our purpose is in education. And when we say journal, I think many of us make another assumption. Now, this is a thing that's published and it looks a certain way. And that may be a part of what we do, although this will be an electronic digital publication. But with the very wonderful editorial committee of people who've agreed to support us in this project, we also thought, you know, this needs to be, we're talking about a space for dialogue, for exchange of knowledge, of ideas. That needs to be a living space. So even if we publish a volume of a journal annually or two times a year, whatever, to, you know, whatever we decide, we want to get people really excited about the ideas that are in it. So we want to publish things as they come along. We want them to be peer reviewed because we want that sort of legitimate feedback from colleagues about, you know, how work can be improved, just like we do for our students.
Yeah.
And so things will be peer reviewed, but they will appear as they are accepted, and we will have ways for listeners or readers to engage perhaps in a format like this with someone who can talk a bit about what drove their research, what was the question that they wanted to answer, what were the challenges that they encountered, or where is that research taking them now? And so it really does become somehow a space for dialogue. And I've been amazed in really in recent weeks, particularly, at how many just incredible, thoughtful, articulate practitioners are out there with projects who are just hungry to learn, to improve, to explore, and to share that with others.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's inspiring listening to it. And one thing I know we've talked about a bit in the as this has developed is how we can maybe help people understand the transferability of some things, and how a piece of research that we were able to share and to publish and to have peer reviewed might spark similar kind of knock-on studies in different contexts.
And could be, I think, really empowering for some people.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
It makes me want to ask another question.
Go for it,
Worth exploring. But it's because, well, when I think about research in education, or ways in which we try to deepen our understanding of what we do, it's because you're thinking about learning and how learning takes place.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer in breaking down another barrier, or making a bridge, you know, so that the way we talk about learning for students in our classes is no different from the way we talk about adults as learners. We're all learners, and this is a space of learning. So if I ask you what learning is, what it means to you, and how you would like to see it articulated in our work, what would that be?
Well, big question.
I love big questions.
$64,000 doesn't feel quite big enough for that one. So I think for sure, when we learn, whether we're barely out of nappies or you know, aging adults, as in my case, we can learn about stuff. There are things. There are concepts, there are facts, there's knowledge, there's understanding, this stuff. I think we can learn skills. My lockdown project was to learn Spanish. I've always enjoyed languages. Was, you know, coming through school in a different era was, as a scientist, not allowed to carry on learning languages, and that was just how it was. And I've loved learning the skills of listening and speaking and being able to write in a different language. That's been great. And we learn all sorts of things. I think there's also, you know, so if you look at the education system in this country, quite a large amount of the definition of learning would probably focus only on those things. And we've heard, you know, almost warring factions between the knowledge zealots and the skills advocates, where it actually becomes an either or. But I think most cogent commentators on education would see the deeply intertwined mix there of knowledge and skills together and good education doing so. But I think there's wider stuff as well. There's learning about self, learning about what makes us tick, how to self-manage, how to self-regulate, how to self-actualize. And that, you know, in an ideal world, you'd have an education system which maximized that learning as well. We're constantly told by people usually outside of education that education needs to prepare young people for a world that we don't know yet. Well, that's almost a contradiction in itself, because if there's an end in mind but you don't know what the end is, then how's the end in mind? So my suggestion would be that actually schools, when they've done things well for an awful long time, have always prepared young people for a world that they can't yet know, by those young people, as they go through the whole process of education, learning about stuff, developing and learning and refining skills, and learning about self, and also learning about the interaction of self with others. And that's about community, it's about humanity, and so on and so on. So as we're starting to hear recently, maybe education has the possibility to evolve a bit more from what can be seen as slightly transactional, that you know, as students go to school in order to acquire certain qualifications, and that's therefore the currency of progression. But actually there's this idea of educating to be human. And what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to lead a flourishing life? And delighted to be working with some really thoughtful people on all of this area. We're going to be curating and co-hosting a content strand at the festival this summer on that very topic, this idea of humanity and flourishing. Some of our colleagues here, Katie Granville Chapman and Emmy Bidson, have written really impactful stuff about this. And working with the Oxford Character Project and the Harvard Center for Human Flourishing and the Jubilee Center. And again, comes back to the bridge idea that you're connecting together good people and good things. I think there's something really important in the world of education there. At the same time, we're looking at education systems, plural, not just in this country, but in other parts of the world, where they're struggling with just the enormity of the day-to-day. There are recruitment and retention crises in different countries around the world, and that comes down to many factors. But among those factors are teacher agency, ability to manage workload and expectation, the whole area of leadership and what leadership, the effect of leadership on the people that are working, and so on. And that this all links back to this: like, if young people need to learn about self, so do adults, about self and systems and interactions and so on. So I think that there's great hope for the direction that education can move in. We hear a lot of clamor that AI is going to change the world, and of course it is already doing that. And again, I think I kind of side with a lot of commentators who are saying, well, with this rise in the potential of technology and what AI can do, and when we get into fully generative AI and so on, that even more is possible. But at the same time, there's a concurrent and commensurate imperative for elevating humanity, connection, relationships, the things that machines can, well, some would say could never do. I think we've got to be careful there sometimes. You know, it's easy to see how people can convince themselves that a machine is a human. You see, you know, scams mm-hmm. that are generated by bots. They're not, you know, people befriend and fall in love with things that don't exist. So maybe it's not quite as simple as to say that humans can be humans and machines can never be human. I think the lines are going to get blurred a little bit, but so much about being human is about connection. It's about relationships. It's about you know, those intensely human things like love and awe and wonder and curiosity. And those kind of areas, you know, maybe there's going to be scope for education to really fuel some of those even more in the future. If some of the more drudge-related things can be automated in some form. But none of that gets away from the fact that humans learn in a way that is impossible to change. Like, there are things that happen in the brain, things that we know, things that it doesn't matter whether you consume it from a book, from an audio, from someone telling you, from a screen, from anything. Changes that happen in the brain are happening because they're the changes that happen when learning happens. And how we can activate really deep thought, how can we stimulate and inspire in whatever way so that the residue of deep thinking is what gives rise to a lot of the learning.
I have so many things going through my head as you're talking about that. I'm sure many of us.
many contradictions. But
No. And I think from past conversations that we agree that some of the discourse on future-proofing education is sort of absurd, really.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about one of the areas that's really increasingly of interest to me, and that is having a part of our approach to education being about not future-proofing, which we can't do, but helping people to embrace in a positive way ambiguity.
Yeah.
And that requires another kind of skill set.
Yeah.
And it requires being aware of and working with people's feelings, their emotions. And we know that people's thinking and their feeling are intertwined. And that is also something that takes place in the brain, and that we could be perhaps working with in more deliberate ways.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know, it's actually when you look at the state of the world, particularly in recent days, it's more than disconcerting. And so when I hear you speaking about the potential of humanity to do good things, to feel good things, to flourish, to be all that humanity can be, it's helpful. And inspiring, and it makes me think again that another element in this whole process of thinking about learning and what that can be should be also focused on a capacity that children have from a very young age of thinking ethically.
Yes.
So the things that are new to the world around us and that we need to acknowledge and we need to deal with, we may also want to be questioning. And in what ways is it going to contribute to all that humanity can be? And in what ways would we perhaps like to say no or reshape?
Yeah, and for me, that's what you just said there sparks off some thoughts about the clamor for innovation that we hear in again from a variety of sources, but the real spread of understanding of what innovation actually means. And, you know, in some quarters, I think there's a sense that everything good is new and everything new is good. And there's no consideration of the ethical or indeed the efficacy of some of those things. One thing I want the bridge to try and do is to contribute to that conversation about innovation, that actually it's innovative and it's pioneering to plot a wonderful course through the combination of what do we know about humans and about people, about education, about learning, about life, and et cetera, that can be married together with new things that help, not simply new things that are new. That ethical stance comes into that really very, very clearly for me. Excellent. Well, we've solved the problems of the world so far.
Well, excellent.
So we discussed some interesting and big questions there in that conversation, and we're curious what questions come to your mind as you think about these significant things. How can you get involved with the bridge? How can we help you, and how can we continue to connect good things to good people? Please leave a comment, ask a question, and like, follow, and subscribe to hear more from Bridge Ed. You can also follow The Bridge on LinkedIn, and you can find out more information on our website at thebridge.wellingtoncollege.org.uk. Until next time.